The High on the Landers podcast is recorded from our Wanaka location where they're all Highlanders fans. Cue the bagpipes!
Welcome to podcastsport.com and the first edition of the High on the Landers podcast. We've got a debutant today, Wes Robertson. How are you, Wes?
Here we go. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me on the show. It's an honour, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Good stuff, mate. You've probably heard a few of our podcasts. We've been gagging to get you on here, mate. So today we're going to talk rugby. We're going to talk the World Cup, how the All Blacks went, how we think the tournament went. As is the theme of the show, we're going to talk about the Highlanders' winning season last year and looking forward to 2016. And if we've got time, we'll finish up with a little bit about the New York Knicks. So I guess the first order of business right away, I touched on it with Cole yesterday, Rugby World Cup, we did it, first team to go back-to-back, first team to win three titles, great send-off for two of the true greats of the game, Richie McCaw, Dan Carter, obviously a few other guys, Woodcock, Nonu, Conrad Smith and Kevin Mealamu. So how did you feel about the tournament first up, Wes?
Well, just in general terms, we'll get onto the All Blacks shortly, Rob, but I think the best teams made it to the pointy end of the competition, and the best team won. I think the way the draw was set up when they did the seedings 3 years ago was probably wrong. They need to reevaluate that and perhaps base the seedings a little bit closer to the tournament itself. So you had that pool of death, and you were thinking prior to the tournament starting, you had one really good team wasn't going to make it out of that pool.
True. That being England.
Yeah, well, they weren't a good team, it turned out. So the pool of death was a bit of a myth, really. So the teams that made it out of their pools deserved to do that. They played the better rugby. And come quarterfinals time, again, the best teams progressed all the way through to the two best teams being in the final, and of course the best team won.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that assessment. I picked Australia at 9-1 odds to win the whole thing before the tournament, just because of the odds they were getting. But I was comfortable with the fact that if the All Blacks survived a scare in the quarters or semis, that we would, if we did make the final, we'd win it. Really happy to have Aussie in the final. Totally agree with your assessment about the teams getting through. There's been, obviously, you know, the Southern Hemisphere's come on in leaps and bounds, and they were the top four teams at the end of it. I think just basically on enterprise, really, the Irish sort of seemed to run out of ideas when really pressed by the Argentinians. They had a good tournament. Obviously, the English, when it came down to it against Wales, just didn't quite show that creativity. They did go for that corner kick, but they weren't comfortable with thinking outside the square, if you will, and that's probably why Wales got through. So it is good for the game, I think, to see these teams that are prepared to put it on the line in all test matches grow comfortable with actually taking risks and be better for it.
Oh, I agree 100%, Rob. There needs to be a change in mindset for the Northern Hemisphere teams, and Wales were ravaged by injuries, and I think they're probably the Northern Hemisphere team that does try and play with the ball. They try and play rugby as opposed to playing for penalties. But you just saw them in the match, their final pool match against Australia, and that's, okay, not a knockout game as such, but that's more or less, that was a quarterfinal, wasn't it? Quarterfinal intensity. They had Australia down to 13 men, and they couldn't score.
Yep.
Just kept on doing one-off runners, hit it up, no flair, no creativity. And I think that there really signals to me that's where the Northern Hemisphere teams are at. They're just lacking that imagination, can't think outside the box, and accordingly, none of them did any good in the World Cup.
Yeah, and I think the thing about it too is that maybe they have learnt their lesson finally this time. With the emergence of Argentina as a threat to them, and and obviously South Africa having some quite exciting backs and those sort of thing, and slowly getting away from more of the Northern Hemisphere game themselves, finally the Northern Hemisphere might have actually realised or have some pressure put on them by their own media to shape up or ship out. I think moving on about the tournament, refereeing did play its part as well in deciding that final four, notably obviously the Scotland call. How did you feel about the refereeing in the Cup?
Look, refereeing was generally pretty good. You can't play the game without a referee, and they are human. They make mistakes. Players make mistakes, and you know, if they drop the ball with the line wide open, they get hung out to dry for it, and so do referees. But aside from the odd howler, the NFL pass by the All Blacks in the final, which led to a penalty, that's probably the prime example. But generally, I was pretty satisfied with the standard of refereeing. I'd like to see less of the TMO call and play back for penalties at the clean-out. There was a lot of clamping down on guys making contact with the neck area at the clean-out. It's just, rugby's a technical sport. There's a lot of technical rules, and a referee could blow his whistle all day long if they called up all those penalties. I think they just need to ease off on that. Let the teams play. Nigel Owens let both teams play in the final, and you could argue that he could have called a few more penalties, but he was fair both ways.
Yeah.
He let them sort the ruck out themselves.
Yeah, their consistency as well and letting the game go. I think probably, unfortunately, we lost Jonathan Kaplan a wee while ago. He was really good at that. Obviously, Joubert has copped some criticism, but to be fair to him, if you look at that Scotland game as a take a holistic view of that, you know, both sides were allowed to play, and I think that's down to the way Joubert refs the game. I mean, the scoreline was in the 30s for a team. You know, why would you want it finishing 15-9 or something like that? Jaco Pieper, I think, refed really well, and Owens. So the trend is in the right direction for letting the game flow. It's up to the teams, actually, like we've just touched on previously, for those Northern Hemisphere teams to actually pull finger and play and not make the breakdown a talking point, but make it an asset in your game and try and get recycled ball really quick.
Yeah, agreed. Northern Hemisphere points and laughs at Super Rugby saying it's touch football, but what it is it's a lot faster. The referees allow a little bit more at the breakdown. The pace of the game is that much quicker, and we're scoring tries. And, you know, you can snigger to yourself as much as you want, England, but look who made it through the quarterfinals and yep. The semifinals and the final. What works?
Look, so, in real terms for me, refereeing-wise, I thought the Joubert call against Scotland was probably a 50-50 call, and especially at full speed, it looked like a penalty. For me, if you were going to pick a call out of that game, was probably Sean Maitland getting sent off, which I would have been more up in arms about had I been on the wrong side of that one.
Yeah, it's just that the penalty that he did call for the accidental offside, and you're right, they can get called either way. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a scrum, or equally, I wouldn't be surprised if it was called for a penalty for that sort of infringement. But it was the winning of the game, and accordingly, there was a lot more scrutiny on it. Well, yep. What can you do?
Yep, and so we've
as the ref
and exactly, and we've got to the point where the top four teams did make it to the semi-finals, in our opinion, and Argentina has also had to evolve their game, which they have in the Rugby Championship, and they were a huge improvement team for you.
Massive improvements over the last 3 to 4 years since they've been into the Rugby Championship. You've just seen how they've come on in leaps and bounds. They've taken a few beatings, but from those beatings, they've taken many lessons from the top teams on how to play.
Yeah.
You can see the benefit that they're getting from it. They've changed their style from the forward-dominated eight-man shove, which they were renowned for. Yep. They still retain that forward power, but now they have the back line to go with it. So if they can get parity up front, which with that forward pack, let's be honest, they will get at least parity more times than not.
Yep.
They can get that steady supply of ball to feed that back line.
Yep.
Look out. Hey, 2019, genuine contenders in Japan.
Yep, and look, you and I have discussed before that the Northern Hemisphere, you know, needs to evolve its game, and that's showing in teams, as you pointed out to me once before, that teams like Italy and that aren't improving because the standard's not improving.
That's right. How long has it been since Italy joined the then Five Nations to make it the Six Nations? It's been a decade.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact time, but what have they done since then?
Yep.
They've stagnated. They've haven't changed their style of play. They're still copping hammerings. Their defence has improved, but when you're doing that much tackling, you're going to get better at it.
Yep. And look, not even just them. It's the attitude. It's the way that the Southern Hemisphere wants to evolve the good of rugby. I mean, the New Zealand's had input, and this is where I've argued with Northern Hemisphere people in the past, notably my hatred for the Irish, a few Irish fans out there that I've had arguments with. You know, like, for instance, this year, we obviously know that the previous... the Polynesian countries have had a lot of input into Rugby New Zealand, so it's great to know that this year... the Chiefs and Crusaders are actually going to play a round robin game over there. It's something that's meaningful. We're bringing Argentina into the Super Rugby as well, and we're expanding to places like Japan and being a little bit selfless with how we use the All Blacks brand, and obviously the Wallabies are contributing and the Springboks as well, by bringing these teams in. And it would be good to see the Northern Hemisphere actually look outside that square and start to involve at least a tier two. You know, a few of those tier two teams like Georgia and that would potentially be able to compete in years to come and could contribute to some exciting games.
Agree 100%. I hate the expression minnows to be used for teams like Georgia and Romania. These are good teams. They're well coached. They're getting some money pumped into them by World Rugby. The development that is getting put in, starting to see the results at the World Cup. You know, two or three World Cups ago, teams were getting flogged by 100 points, and it's just not happening now. It's a stretch to say that Georgia is going to compete with one of the Six Nations teams.
Yep.
But given time and more improvement, I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibilities.
Yep.
Potentially, I've heard proposals for a tier two, let's call it that, they're not minnows, a tier two Six Nations in Europe with teams like Georgia and Romania.
Yep.
Competing, with the winner of that playing off against the loser of the Tier 1 Six Nations.
Yeah, well, I think you've got to involve the US and Canada in that too. Maybe a Pacific Rim type of thing. If somehow you can get that Georgia, Romania teams involved with the US, Canada and Japan and create something in that gap, and I think the next step as well is possibly, maybe not in an international sense, but getting the Polynesian countries involved at least in Super Rugby. Those would be where I think World Rugby needs to step up into next.
I agree. Unfortunately for the Pacific Island nations, the money's not there for as far as TV audiences go.
Yep.
So there's perhaps some sort of return on investment issues that World Rugby would be contemplating if they're going to expand into that area.
Yep.
But if we're talking purely for the good of the game, it needs to be done. The Polynesian countries provide just a conveyor belt or factory line of amazing players.
Yep.
Makes for great TV. Need to develop them.
For sure. So speaking of return on investment, the only thing that saved the fact that England got bounced out was the fact that the All Blacks became the story of the tournament. Obviously, Sonny Bill Williams, like it or lump him, gestures to fans, and the All Blacks themselves professionally handling a tournament from start to finish and dealing the winning blow. So obviously, we were pretty happy with how it shaked out. And World Cup wrap-up, tell me... Quickly, let's bang this through. How did you rate the All Blacks going through the World Cup, and where do we go next?
I think what we saw from the All Blacks was a premeditated plan on how to pace themselves through the pool play and peak at the right time.
Yep.
So, I mean, we don't need to go on in any great length about the questions that were being raised about the All Blacks' performances during pool play.
Yep.
In hindsight... It was a master plan. They had the plan, they stuck to it and picked at the right time. So you've got to give so much credit to Shag Hansen and the other coaching staff for what they've done. We're just that far in front of some of the other nations in terms of our thinking and the way we approach the game. And
eight years ago, we copped criticism for that player rotation, which in hindsight probably was overdone. But we've reached a good medium where we've built some depth, and as you and I have discussed offline, we didn't experience those injuries. We were the fittest team there, which led to the less injuries, but when there are injuries, we had some good depth too.
Yeah, well, the major injury we had was Woodcock, and his next in line, Crockett, also went down, but Joe Moody, coming straight off a plane from the ITM Cup and not skipping a beat. We've got depth in the squad. It's amazing what Hansen and the other coaching staff have done over the last 4 years. They've integrated that many players, new talent, into the All Blacks environment. Guys like Messam and Naholo hardly got a run.
Yep.
And then you've got guys like Bowden Barrett, Sonny Bill, Sam Kane coming off the bench, Aaron Cruden, not even considered due to injury. Teams just cannot compete with that depth in the squad and our firepower off the bench.
Too right, and you know, we were fortunate enough that New Zealand Rugby has made the conscious decision to keep the ITM Cup running, and the reason for that is, you know, our guys coming back over, we're coming straight out, getting pulled straight out of rugby training and straight off training parks to come and play, and we're ready. We had guys, you know, Matt Todd, you've got Israel Dagg not even playing, you've got all of these guys, Karate, still performing back home, and that's really helped, I think, drive home the All Blacks dominance over the last few years. A lot of, obviously, ITM Cup guys stepping up into Super Rugby, which we're going to talk on next, and from that we'll flow on to the next batch of All Blacks now that we've had that exodus. So where do we go from there? Where do we go?
Well, nothing's been announced yet, but I think the reign of the King is about to come to an end. Richie, he's got nothing left to prove in the game, so he's going to leave a massive void. If we're talking purely about his replacement in the seven jersey, you would struggle to replace Richie's leadership capabilities, but we'll just talk about positional issues here. Sam Kane is the obvious choice. Look, he's played 30-odd tests now. He's been around the team for 4 years. I have every confidence he can slot straight in.
Yeah.
What Kane brings to the team is a little bit different from what Richie brought. Richie evolved into more of a ball carrier near the end of his career, where Kane's a fetcher. He gets around the paddock in support, and he scrounges for that turnover. So Kane will slot into seven. I think that's a given. But yep, given the way he plays the game slightly different from Richie, I think we may see a reshuffle in the loose forward trio. Kano, I think, may be done.
Yeah.
Not medium term. I think he'll be there next year and possibly the next year after that for the Lions. But I think he's on the downward slope. Age will catch up with him.
Yep.
So we might be looking at another big ball running number six to replace him, and also to pick up some of the slack from the ball running that Richie used to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if a few of those guys hang on till the Lions tour with Hansen as a bit of a transition, or, I mean, Hansen's indicated he might continue, but maybe the Lions tour will be his swan song. I would hope that we can gradually, you know, because they've got a lot of knowledge to pass on and tricks and those sort of things, and even if Richie's not there and those sort of things, guys like Kieran Reid, Kano, can pass that knowledge on to the next lot of guys because they played with McCaw and they know where he... Then even if they couldn't compete with him in greatness terms, they know the lines that he ran, they know what job he did. So there's obviously that knowledge. We don't want that knowledge gap, and New Zealand's always been very good at sort of plugging that. I guess, so that's obviously the loose forward thing. You know, Artie Sevier is going to be one to watch for sure. And obviously there'll be a few backs, Conrad and Martin Onu leaving.
Yeah, well, this is where I think the All Blacks are going to have the most issues in the midfield. So Sonny Bill's off to the Olympics next year, hopefully get another medal he can give away to the next crazed fan that leaps the fence. But so we've basically got 12 and 13 to fill. Massive boots to fill of Nonil and Comrade Smith, the most experienced in appearing in Test history. We do have one option with SBW out of the running, Fekitoa. I'm a massive fan, being
genuine player.
So he's been around the team for a couple of years now, and I feel he may get first crack at it next year. I feel he's probably going to get put in at 13. So I think they might have a look at George Moala at 12. He's got that power game, which similar to Nonu. Obviously, I'm not comparing him to Nonu because he doesn't quite have the skill level that Nonu did. But if we're looking for a power player at 12 and a bit more skill, guile and speed at 13, Moala and Fekitoa is probably going to be the combination, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess with the South Africans having some good young players in their midfield, we're going to have to compete straight away. And I think, obviously, Fekitoa's been in the environment. Although, all worries aside, I mean, you look a few years back when Nonu and Co had their, you know, their form slumps or were just coming back into the team and those sort of things. We had a few of those dependable guys that could just play well. And I think Ryan Crotty fits that mould. We had guys like, you know, Tui Tavaki and Benson Stanley that played a few tests in the midfield and, to be honest, never played a bad game, but they just obviously weren't X-factor guys. So I think New Zealand Rugby does have enough of those guys, at least in the transition period, to get us through. With a bit of luck, obviously somebody comes along in the next couple of years that's a genuine game-breaker. I think Fekitoa can be, and Fekitoa's strength is his systematic defence. You know, the Highlanders weren't a team full of stars, but they played to a plan and they played to a system, and he can fit into any situation like that.
That's right. I think, Crotty is going to be in the squad. That's for sure. He is Mr. Dependable. I think next year is going to be the year to try something a little bit different, and this is where my thinking is with Moala. But if that falls over, then Crotty's just going to slot right in, and you know he's going to do his job. He is reliable.
Right, well, we could touch on the prop and hooker issues, although I think we're a bit long in the tooth for this Rugby World Cup. We've talked about the All Blacks. We've just started to talk about Fekitoa and obviously Sapawanga and guys like that coming into the fold. That's wet my whistle. One thing that we did think we'd see in our own lifetime was the All Blacks winning another World Cup. One thing we didn't feel that, with 12 months ago, that could possibly be in our future was the Highlanders being the reigning Super Rugby champions.
Oh, how good was it, Rob? we're long-suffering Highlanders fans, and it's been some pretty dark times down south since around about the turn of the millennium.
Yeah.
It's just amazing last year to see a team of, well, I won't say no names because there was a scattering of stars throughout there, but just really unfancy guys digging deep, just doing it for the team and for the jersey, and just really putting a bit of backbone, a bit of pride back into the blue and gold jumper.
Too right, and this is why we're here. And look, you and I have long suffering. It's not a burden being a Highlanders supporter. We're proud. The funny thing is, thinking that this team would be the first group to win a title for the Highlanders is the thing that stands out for me because of all of the greats that have come before us. And in fact, a mutual friend of mine, Hemi Karamina, shout out to him and to John Timu because he got a signed ball for my son from JT. But you think about all of these players, Jeff Wilson, guys like that have come before this team that have a lot of names that have never held that trophy, and this group of guys got to do it. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The closest the Highlanders came was in 98, party at Tony Brown's. I was there, I remember some of it.
But
that Highlanders team was stacked with All Blacks, all the stars, and just couldn't get it done. So for those guys who got that close and didn't quite get the cash, they'd just be proud as punch for this guy, this bunch of unfancied cast-offs in some respects.
Too right. And, I mean, even 2 years ago, we had Ma Nonu having one of the worst seasons ever, Colin Slade breaking his jaw twice before getting back into the All Blacks and playing well for Canterbury again. We've had Brad Thorne, we've had Woodcock, all of these guys having some terrible issues, and then all of a sudden, this team just came out of nowhere with guys like, you think about that young Ford pack, how well they played, and the Lucys, that they really, really showed up. Obviously, Nasimanu is going to be a big loss for the team, and he was the driving force. We have to start with Nasi.
Massive loss, Rob. Firstly, I'll just touch on the continuity in the squad. Aside from Nasimanu, there hasn't been much of a turnover. So I think the continuity in the squad will be a bit of a plus going into the season.
Yep.
So, but Nasi is a massive loss. He led from the front on attack and D.
Yeah.
Very hard to replace that. Always over the advantage line, and just relentless, non-stop. That's going to be hard to replace. And I said to you a couple months ago, you may recall, that the Highlanders should have a bit of a look and see if they could nab someone like a Liam Squire or a Luke Whitelock to fill the void.
Yep.
Yeah, well,
guess
look what happened.
They nabbed them both.
Yes, Squire. I'll start with Liam Squire. There's a lot to like with him with the ball in hand. Like Nasimanu, he gets over the advantage line consistently. So they'll hopefully get us that front foot ball, which Aaron Smith just feeds off, gets that beautiful pass of his fizzing and gets the back line off on the right foot. So that's something I'm looking forward to from Liam Squire. He's not as much of a force at the ruck, where Nasi quite often seems to get over top of the ball and nab turnovers at crucial times.
Yeah.
Luke Whitelock is, for me, a more rounded player. He's likely to get the start because of that. There's no real weaknesses to his game. He's not as much of an impactful ball runner as Liam Squire. But he's good right across the park, attack and defence, and he's a line-out option too.
Yeah.
He's been stuck behind Kieran Reid at the Crusaders for a few years now, and I think he's ready to explode with a massive year.
Yep, and I think having those guys that are versatile enough to slot into places behind those guys like Whitelock and Squire, you've got Dan Pryor, who just played his guts out. Elliot Dixon, those guys that had to change positions, and Shane Christie and guys like that. Look, I think it's, again, we're coming into a season with, not huge names, but the first lot of real genuine depth that we've had in a wee while.
Yeah, there's a good mix to that loose forward roster there. Rob, yeah, Dan Pryor had an outstanding finish to the season, and where did he come from prior to that? He's a cast-off from Northland. No one wanted him. He came down south, became part of the culture, and just had a blinder.
Yep. And obviously we'll miss Nasi. One of the best things ever was seeing his promo shots with Snake the day before the final, and his eye looked like it was melted wax.
Yeah, not to mention he's got the best broken nose I've ever seen since Rob Penny. So yep. I'm going to miss seeing that lovely mug in post-match interviews.
Yep, and about our backline too. So how does our backline formulate this year? Obviously, we've lost Treby.
Treby's out, and just going back to what we said about Ryan Crotty as being a Mr. Dependable in the All Blacks environment, Treby was that man for the Highlanders. Pretty reliable, head down, charging up through the 12 channel, and didn't miss a lot of tackles. But he's been forced out essentially by the Barracuda, I believe. Who's just shown such versatility, playing from the wing, fullback, all the way into the 12.
Yep.
So I think they've liked what they've seen from the Barracuda, as have I.
Yep.
He's just such a cult character, and he pops up at the right time. You wouldn't think, watching him play in the ITM Cup, that he would perform so well at the super level, but he clearly thrives on that step up.
Yeah.
I think he'll be at 12 and Fecky at 13.
Yep, and look, to see guys, genuine game breakers like Osborne and Naholo come back is really positive for the franchise. Obviously, Ben Smith is going to lock down that fullback, so it will be good to see Buckman actually move in and get some more opportunities with the ball in hand or to create. And with some genuine finishes around him, I think, you know, he could do some damage.
Yeah, that's right. If teams are going to be marking up on the strike power out wide, Naholo, Fekitoa, Ben Smith, of course, and Osborne, it's going to open up channels on the inside for guys like Barracuda to sneak in. If the drift defence is going to really mark up on that firepower out wide, look for the odd inside ball back into Ben Smith and the Barracuda sneaking up the middle.
So we've covered the back line, and obviously wanting Naholo to go from where he left off and those sort of things. Ben Smith and you know, Osborne, Fekitoa, Sapawonga, as long as they D up, we should be good. What are some other keys to us defending this title, mate?
All right, number one, we've got to make a fortress out of Forsyth Barr Stadium. We have the privilege of playing under a roof in perfect conditions every week. Really suits our style of play. We're a team built for running rugby, so we need to make sure we take advantage of that. Score bonus point wins at home, because away from home, in the wet, we're not quite the same team.
Yep.
So I think we need to bank as many points as we can in Dunedin.
Yep, and look, we did actually use that to our advantage last year. If you think about some of the wins we had at home, especially against South African teams, we beat the Sharks 48-15. I think we beat the Stormers 39-21. We beat the Cheetahs away, you know, in good conditions again, but being able to train in a good environment and actually get some ball movement, you know, and that Hurricanes, obviously we lost to the Hurricanes at home, but we managed to beat them up there. We did have some really good home games, though. We beat the Chiefs coming into one of the last weeks, 36-9, you know, at home. So some really, really good results under the roof that have eluded us in the past, and obviously we built teams around, you know, Carisbrook and that sort of thing, and toughness and stuff like that. But hey, going the other way and playing exciting ball and running other teams off the park's just as good.
Absolutely, and I think it comes to do with the team culture as well. I've sort of mentioned it a couple of times that guys love coming down south and they buy into the Highlanders culture, and just adding the Fortress Forsyth Barr Stadium as part of that culture, like the Brook used to be the House of Pain, it just builds on that, and I think we really need to cash in on that.
Yep. What's next on your list?
Well, I think continuity in the squad we referred to already, so we won't dwell on it. Yep. Hasn't been much turnover, so we can hit the ground running. Yep. I think that's pretty important to start winning immediately, because you look at last year's Super Rugby and the Crusaders really took 4 to 5 rounds to get going.
Yep.
And ultimately they just missed out on a playoff spot, so you need to get going.
Yep. We've got a big chunk of games that are teams that in the past weirdly we've struggled against because they haven't been that, even though they haven't been that strong, and we've got a bye week in week 8. Coming up to week 8, we've got 3 out of 5 games in a row at home. We've got the Highlanders Lions, and then we're away Waratahs, and then we've got Rebels Force, and then we're away for the Reds. Now, we really need to come into that bye week having nailed those 3 home games against a few bunnies. We need to put the Force, the Rebels and the Lions all the way at home and put some big numbers on them.
Yep, you said it, and for some reason, I don't know why, but we struggle to get the wood over the Rebels and the Force, and that needs to change if we're going to defend this title.
Yeah, and we lost to the Lions last year as well.
Yeah, hope that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, one man who's going to be very key to that is probably Aaron Smith.
Mate, he's got the best pass I've seen since Graham Bishop. He's the engine that keeps the ABs and the Highlanders humming. Our forwards need to gain parity up front, get on the front foot to allow them the platforms to unleash that magnificent pass. It's a thing of beauty, and it gives the backs just that little bit more time to work with. So the key to getting that parity up front is for the forward pack to do the basics. I know it's a cliche, but you win your scrums, win your lineouts, keep your turnovers to a minimum. We'll get 50% of possession, hopefully, and if we get 50% of possession fed to that star-studded back line, we're going to be there or thereabouts.
Yep. Well, look, I'm excited for this season. Doing the basics is exactly right. That's what you need to do to win games. And the All Blacks, as has been pointed out by quite a few of the English commentators. The All Blacks got the basics right, but at pace. And I think the Highlanders can do that. They've got young guys that are quick, but that have been in some pressure games now. They know that they can win playoff games. So to do that basics, that basic rugby stuff at speed, is a real asset, and especially on when we know that we're going to get perfect conditions every time. Waz, it's been a pleasure talking rugby. High on the Landers podcast, hopefully we're going to be bringing to our listeners next year. Great to talk about Rugby World Cup and, you know, some really, really good silverware in the cabinet for the next wee while, both on the Highlanders front and on the All Blacks game. So, yeah, it's onwards and upwards, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm champing at the bit for the Super Rugby to kick off, Rob. The World Cup has just whet my appetite. Bring it on. Can't wait for February.
Excellent. Now, just really quickly, most rugby listeners can probably turn off, but you know, some of you podcastsport.com regulars might know Waz is one of our resident New York Knicks fans. The Knicks have been through many, many years, more so than the Highlanders, of really tough defeats, boneheaded moves, all of these things. But a little bit of shine to them this year. For the first time in a wee while, they've actually, you know, got a game that's pleasing on the eye. How are you feeling about your Knicks this year, Wes?
For once, I'm optimistic, Rob. I'm not expecting a playoff appearance or anything silly like that. But I think that the signs are there that things may turn. So I don't have any stats or anything to back this up, but I think they're playing harder on D. And I think we're playing at a faster pace on attack. There doesn't seem to be like last year when every single possession was getting forced through the triangle. I think we're getting out on the fast break and just playing what's in front of them as opposed to just overthinking it. And I think that really strangled the offensive game last year.
Yeah, I mean Mello's still one of the most potent offensive players in the league. I know Simmons and guys like that on their podcast have made that point that, you know, Mello's got to be worth at least 20 wins if he can get, you know, he can actually outscore guys head to head. So he's got it, but he's got to also make his teammates better. And that's the thing that some of the other guys, Paul George, LeBron, when they've actually had some true success, have done.
Yeah, correct. Mello, for the last couple of years, he's had a lot on his plate carrying a pretty poor team. But I think this year, there's no big marquee free agent come in, but the free agents that Phil Jackson has got are good blue-collar role-playing guys that are just going to get in, do their job, play hard at both ends, and Mello doesn't have to worry about doing that for them. So I think he may be able to concentrate a little bit more on his own game this year. You know, last year the Knicks were just Mello and four other guys, essentially, but this year I think they're early days, of course, but I think they're forging a bit more of an identity. Robin Lopez, Kylo Quinn, Kevin Serafin, they're hard-working guys who play tough D.
Yep.
And that's something that the Knicks really need to imprint on the team.
Yeah, I was really disappointed as a Magic guy to lose O'Quinn. He bodies up. He's kind of got that attitude of the Knicks of old, you know, a little bit of, not on my watch, you shall not pass, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no layups, mate. That's what it's all about. Charles Oakley bring back that sort of play. But I think, yeah, you're right. The bones of a decent team are there. You got Mello, of course. We know what he's going to bring, and hopefully his knees hold up. But we've got a couple young guys. Jerion Grant, don't know a lot about him, to be honest, but he's shown some flashes. And Paul Zingas, of course. He's doing better than I thought. Started very well, and he looks worthy of the number four pick.
Yeah, so, look, I was really happy with the Porzingis pick, mostly because I think he understood more so than others about how the reasons why European players have found it tough to come over here, to come over to the States, I should say, and play. I think he will put his head down. I think he won't be quite as overwhelmed as some of the other guys about culture shock, because he's not a guy that's looking for stardom, looking for the bright lights. He's looking to play basketball. And I think some of the Euros kind of forget, you know, that the NBA is the best league in the world, and these guys, there's only 450 odd players, and they work harder than anyone. They've got a really long season. They have to put their head down and commit, and I think some guys see it as an opportunity to make money and to be famous, without actually realizing how much effort these NBA players put in day out in the grind that an 82-game season does. And Porzingis seems to have the right attitude.
That's right, Rob. Nothing's going to get given to these guys. They have to work hard for it. And Porzingis is mentioned in quite a few interviews that I've seen on the internet.
Yeah.
How hard he wants to work for it, and how much he loves the game, and how much he's willing to put his body on the line to do whatever it takes. So it's really encouraging to hear that from a guy who's 7'3" and can potentially shoot the three-pointer at 40%.
Yeah, and that's great. And look, I thought the Grant pickup was really good as well. I mean, a product of Notre Dame, it's a tough school. It's got a reasonably good program, but probably more than, you know, it doesn't have the results, obviously, that your Kentuckys and those guys have in recent years, but good values.
Yeah, and what I like from Grant is that when he is on the court with any other backcourt player for the Knicks other than Sasha Vucicic.
Vucicic,
how do you pronounce that? Vucicic. And Jose Calderon. The opposing teams are scoring something like 16 less points per 36 minutes. So there's a massive improvement on D there.
Yeah.
And I like that that sort of attitude. So if he can bring that and show some flashes at the other end, then yeah, I think he could be a promising prospect.
Yep. No, I agree. And so we've pretty much run over time here, Wes, but in a few short words, mate, just give me your prediction for the Knicks this year.
As I said before, they're not going to make the playoffs. I think probably 30 to 32 wins, so there will be a bit of an uptick there, which wouldn't be hard from last year's disaster. But really what I'm trying to see is development of Porzingis and also young Jerian Grant. I like what we've got from the role-playing guys like Lopez and O'Quinn. Really, with the role players in place and with a bit of improvement from Porzingis and a crap load of salary cap space next year, if you can add a marquee free agent, or perhaps two free agents, depending on how much the cap goes up, suddenly the Knicks are looking a little bit stronger in a weak East.
Yep, why not? Well, that's all we've got time for, Wes. So thanks for your input to the Knicks. Hopefully they do, get a little bit of drive. You guys have suffered enough, I think. And, it'd be nice if Dolan could go away on a little holiday for a few years and hand over the reins to somebody else. But that's not happening anytime soon, so the players will need to do it themselves. Wes, it's been a pleasure. We've talked rugby. We've talked Rugby World Cup. We've started off with the Highlanders and the High on the Landers podcast, which we're hopefully going to make a bit of a feature. So, mate, you have a good one. Thanks for your input, and we'll talk again.
Rob, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to doing this again.
Cheers, mate.